You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
You're listening to Vitamin Geek.
Vitamin Geek.
Vitamin Geek.
Vitamin Geek.
You are totally listening to Vitamin Geek.
You are listening to Vitamin Geek.
You're listening to Vitamin Geek.
Vitamin Geek Podcast.
What the hell's the name of the show again?
Vitamin Geek.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back for another exciting edition of the Vitamin Geek Podcast. It is Tuesday, September 27th. I'm your host, Corey Keelan, and with me tonight, it's the three amigos, including me. So I guess it's the two amigos and me. Michael Miller.
Hello. Or hola, if we're doing amigos.
Como estas? Give me chalupa. We also got Patrick Sykes.
What's up?
And that's it. That's all you guys got tonight. So, yeah. Tonight we're going to be talking about the strangest, weirdest movies we've seen. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But first up, let's talk about some VG news.
Let's see what we got here tonight. A lot of news in terms of everyone's probably heard about all the Star Wars films that are going to be coming out in between different, like, you know, the in between the trilogy, the new trilogy films and such. The first one's Rogue One, and the next one's supposed to be Han Solo's solo film. And there's really not been a whole lot more news about that, but there's been rumors about other characters getting their own movies. Back on the September the 19th, there was an announcement that Yoda's past is not going to be explored on film, but it's going to be explored in comic books. So you'll have that to look forward to when they finally print those. And basically they'll be doing a backstory on Yoda's history. That'll be released starting in Star Wars issue number 26. And that won't be until sometime in December. So we'll have some more details on that when it comes down to that time period for you. And Margot Robbie, who I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with, who portrayed Harley Quinn in the excellent film Suicide Squad, announced recently that she's going to produce the Harley Quinn spinoff film. They don't have a director or a production schedule announced yet, but she is basically taking the reins to produce it. She's going to be an executive producer of the spinoff film. It was rumored for a while it would happen, but now, of course, it's official that it's going to get made. And in case anyone hasn't seen this, see if we can post this in the news real quick and go to this link and see the new goody-goody that has been on display here recently. We got another picture from the new Justice League film, and it's Batman's new tactical bat suit.
It looks like Night Owl.
That's what I was fixing to say, man. I was like, I was going to ask your opinion on that, because, I mean, doesn't it look like Night Owl from Watchmen?
Which is also Zack Snyder.
Mm-hmm. Also Zack Snyder. But that's another little goodie that we get to see here ahead of time. And still haven't seen this yet, but Fury Road, Mad Max, has been said that the rumor's going around that it's not going to be a sequel. It's going to be a prequel to the sequel that will fill in the gap between Thunderdome and Fury Road and what's happened between then. So it's not official yet. It's just simply right now a persistent rumor that there's going to be a prequel in the works. But of course, I'll keep an eye out for any more news that happens with that.
Be cool if it happens.
What's that?
I said that'd be cool if it happens.
I'm sure it would be, man. Because I mean, as long as George Miller's doing it, that's what counts. And just so you can see this real quick, I thought this was really cool. I know they're going to make, or they're wanting to make, an Indiana Jones 5, but I don't see how you could keep going with it with Harrison Ford in the part. But I thought this was really cool when I saw it. It's an Indiana Jones animated fan film that's coming out soon.
That's pretty fun.
Yeah, and if you look at that link, or you go to that link, you can see images from the fan film, and it looks really cool. It kind of reminds me of, what was that video game that Disney did back in the early 80s? It was like Dungeons and something or like that, or I don't want to say Dungeons and Dragons, but it was kind of like a Which Way adventure, and you had the knight who was trying to get to the princess or whoever it was. And if you made the wrong choice, of course, he could die and he'd come down like a string of bones and he would disappear. It's just saying, like, the animation looks a lot like that. from that video game.
No idea. Oh, Dragon's Lair.
There you go, Dragon's Lair. It looks a lot like Dragon's Lair style animation, but it looks really cool. Like, it's very recognizable.
Dragon's Lair is Indiana Jones. Don Bluth, right? All Dogs Go to Heaven.
Yeah.
All that stuff.
There you go. But yeah, let's see. September 29th is the official release date for this person's animated Indiana Jones project. So he's saying his name is Schuenmaker, and he is wanting you guys to check it out, which I know I will. He said, just a little disclaimer, though. Please don't expect a full feature film. This is only a 20-minute episode of animation, which is a lot of work that he says is to accomplish with just a team of a handful of assistants. So don't think of this as in the lines of a fully animated feature. It's more like along the lines of a fully animated proof of concept. So he's been working on this for quite a long time. I want to say, like, I think he said he'd been working on it for like 5 years to get this made. So, but yeah, this will kind of be like the tide me over until we get our next Indiana Jones live action film, which they're saying is going to be out July 19th of 2019. I will believe it when I see it. And let's see here. Last but not least, I don't know if anyone saw this or not. It's the last little nugget of Justice League news.
But the thing that we gotta, the question we have to pose is this nugget like a chicken nugget, like a corn nugget, or a shit nugget?
Well, that's more like a chicken nugget. If you'll check out the link I posted, you can see what I'm talking about.
I just meant I'm still taking shits all over DC movies.
Good grief!
I'm gonna watch. Batman v Superman soon, and there's no way I'm gonna like that movie.
Yeah, you're already killing it. Sacking yourself out.
You gotta go in a little more open minded than that, at least.
Yep. But I just posted a link so you can see J.K. Simmons as he'll look in Justice League as Commissioner Gordon.
I thought he was gonna look like fucking
LaRoof.
Like he could just pick up the bat signal himself and wave that bitch around the air.
Well, if you look at him here lately, he looks like he could. But if you check that link out, there's a nice black and white picture of him on the roof of the roof of the building. It's the bat signal there, which looks pretty stinking awesome, I think.
Yeah, he apparently said he was just doing that on his own too, for the movie. So, like, more power to you.
Yeah, he's training with, I think, a former Navy SEAL or a Marine.
Yes.
I mean, but if you check him out, man, he is in amazingly incredible shape.
Rip to dip.
Yep. But that's it for news, man.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, million.
Michael, do you have any news, man?
Yeah.
Cool.
So, I may have talked about this, but honestly, I don't recall. But James Cameron, a long time ago, got the rights for Alita: Battle Angel, which is an old manga and an equally old movie, or anime movie. And they are doing a live-action film of it, of course, being James Cameron. So, kind of the big announcement now is specifically that IMAX and 20th Century Fox announced that it's going to be screening in IMAX theaters worldwide. But to me, the bigger news is just that this is the first time it's even been mentioned in what seems like forever. This was first talked about back when Avatar came out, which has been a lot longer than I think you might realize if you think about it. So, yeah, basically, the moment he put out Avatar, he was like, well, the sequels are going to get priority, and then Alita is going to come afterward. So, this is just cool in general, because again, it's being talked about, and apparently they have a tentative date of July 20th, 2018. So still not, too soon or anything. Robert Rodriguez is actually set to direct the film, and Ooh. Cameron himself is just a producer. But should be pretty exciting, especially, I know we have a Ghost in the Shell, the live action, and teasers were just released for that. So it could be one of these things where people worry about stuff like whitewashing. But hopefully Well, hopefully that film will be good, but hopefully Alita will also do justice to the original.
That's an interesting combo of filmmakers too.
Yeah, it seemed odd to me. Like that was kind of talking through it. You know, I was noticing small things. Like I was like, how was Rodriguez not a bigger part of these previous news stories? But I don't know.
Maybe he's the surprise.
Well, and if anything, I wonder if that's kind of Cameron's way of making sure it happens sooner. Because again, like he said, it wasn't going to happen until after the Avatar sequels. There's supposed to be like 3 sequels of that.
Yeah,
so that's might be him. Like, okay, I trust you. I'm going to produce it. Still, you know, look over your shoulder. But otherwise, you got this.
Nice.
Rodriguez is pretty much like he's pretty gung ho. I think he's just like grab the reins and run with shit. So
yeah,
that'll be interesting.
Yeah. Hey, after Spy Kids 3, I don't think anybody doubts that man can handle this movie.
Well, that Shark Boy and Lava Girl.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness.
Kidding more, of course, because he does have, like, some good range. But it does show his abilities as a director.
Do you have any other news?
I'm going to Anime Week in Atlanta this weekend. I don't know if I'll necessarily get anything that'll be good for the show. But I will see if I can.
Well, otherwise, stories. If nothing else, you get some cool stories for us.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely. So otherwise, it's kind of been all quiet on the Western Front, as they say, or in this case, perhaps on the Eastern Front.
Oh, sorry, that was a bad laugh.
Yeah, you sound like a Pineapple Express dude,
Seth Rogen.
Yeah,
when I don't mean to sound like him, apparently I sound like him.
Cool.
When I try, I fucking sound like me or something. I sound like him, personally. Definitely don't look like him.
No.
Another bummer happened. Yeah. Yesterday? The godfather of gore, Herschel Gordon Lewis, passed away on us. Now, it's been a while since he's made a movie. I hadn't really seen anything come out from him in a long time, so I think he was kind of dormant. But he definitely made a mark on horror movies in general, and especially like the B movies. And I think he influenced a lot of people. I've heard Joe Bob Briggs talk about him. I know he had some influence on like John Waters and Quentin Tarantino, people like that. But I was a big fan of 2000 Maniacs. I've always been a huge proponent of that film. Beam me up, bitch.
Yep.
I've always been a huge fan of that film since my dad started talking about it years and years ago. What the fuck is going on with the fucking tractor beam over there? Have you guys seen any of his stuff? Michael, I'm going to assume, has never even heard of
the band. Yeah, not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
I saw Gore Gore Girls a long, long time ago. I think it was like Midnight Video used to carry those at the video store. And I was just like, you know, I was just, that's going to probably be on my list tonight because I was just like, what is this? You know, I mean, it was his last movie, I think, but I just, you know, I didn't get it. That was the only one I ever saw. I had seen trailers and seen clips of some of the other films, but I personally wasn't really intrigued by them, but I had heard for a long time. Like I think we got like a book at McKay's one time that was all about his movies. And I knew he was very controversial. Like it was like probably more taboo than anything you could ever watch in that genre ever.
So, okay. So Gore Gore Girls came out in 72.
Okay.
He actually had a Blood Feast 2 All You Can Eat that came out in 2002. So he took what, a 30-year hiatus?
Yeah. Sounds like it.
And then the Uh-Oh Show came out in 2009. And apparently he actually has something in post-production right now. So I'm not sure. It's a horror anthology comprised of 4 distinct segments that feature a raucous combination of satirical humor, horror, gore, and enough surprises to satisfy film enthusiasts and horror fans alike. That will be cool.
Yeah.
If it ever comes out.
it'll get out, especially now that he's passed.
So one of the things, there was a documentary about him. What was it called? I can't remember the name of it. Pardon me on that. But, it had a lot of interviews with Joe Bob Briggs and various other people. Actually, I think I watched it on Full Moon Streaming. I can't remember the name of it though, but it's on there. He got his start not with horror, but with, what's the term? Nudie cutie? Is that what they're called? Basically, like, they're not porn, but just like, just naked chicks hanging out doing shit. I mean, I think they're called nudie cuties, but that's how he kind of got his start, and then he sort of got into horror and started going crazy from there. I think Blood Feast was probably the first horror movie he did.
Okay. Was that in the 60s?
63.
Goodness.
I'm having to look up dates and shit, but yeah, he'll be missed, man. We've had some rough times past couple years as far as like horror personalities go. But yeah, he definitely put out a body of work that will be remembered for better or worse.
That is very true.
And yeah, like Patrick said, I think I'll probably throw in 2000 Maniacs tonight or something. That's probably my favorite from him. I think it's hilarious. but yeah, he'll be missed. I think that's all the news I had. So,
okay.
Much as I don't want to talk about that kind of shit, but you know. Yeah, do we have some previews?
Yeah, I got a few. Let's see. Here's something I found that was pretty cool. You can pre-order this at the Mezco site. And it won't be released. If I remember the date, I don't think it comes out until next March. It's a 1/12 scale Joker figure.
So it's, what is this?
So it's got the Batman and the Joker 1/12 collective action figure. And according to EE Entertainment Earth, it'll be out April 2017. They were saying like it could be released as early as March. So I think if you order it through the site and do the pre-order, you might get it sooner.
What is that, 6 inches?
I can't remember what the 1/12 is. I want to say it's 7 or more. But it's got fully articulated. Like it's got tons of articulation on it. It's got 28 points of articulation. It's got a fully clothed or fully, you know, how would you say? Like it's got full fabric clothing on it. I mean, it's got 2 facial sculpts. You get multiple hands. It comes with accessories. It's actually pretty sweet. I mean, I'm seriously considering doing a pre-order on this. If I'm not mistaken, they will not charge you for the pre-order until they're going to release it.
That's the way it should be.
Absolutely. So you always got to make sure. And for all you Creepshow fans, you're going to get your wishes fulfilled if you're a big Creepshow Part 2 fan. Let me post this link for you, which I think, Corey, you already saw it, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, Arrow Video is putting out Creepshow 2. I did manage to get the Bride of Reanimator, a copy of that version they put out here recently, which was absolutely awesome. It's the best that has ever looked. I can only imagine what they'll do with Creepshow 2. There is going to be a limited 3,000 print edition, which will come with some extra goodies. So you'll want to go pre-order that because that will undoubtedly sell out really fast. For that one, I'm sure. So let's see here. And you got, this was really cool when I saw it. I am really there's just so much stuff coming out, man. I'm going to be so broke. That's why I got to buy everybody's Christmas before December gets here, because all the good stuff is coming out.
They want you to buy all the shit. I'm
telling you, dude, the Mad Max High Octane Blu-ray collection is coming out, and it is going to be totally amazing. It's going to have all 4 films in it. You're also going to get exclusive features, and you will get the soon-to-be-released Fury Road 2-film collection, which will have both the full-color version and the black-and-white-only version. That will be in the set. And let's see, where did they say that was going to be? They had a release date for that. Let's see. I'm pretty positive this is going to be in December. Sorry, I'm not pulling that up. There it is, December 8th. So save your money. I would probably say probably $75 easy for that one. And let's see here. Highlander fans? Any Highlander fans around here?
Well, there can be only one, so no.
Oh, good grief.
Yeah, it's okay.
I know. I'm just not a huge I know fan. Michael's got to be a Highlander fan. But,
yeah.
There you go. 30th anniversary Blu-ray is coming out. It's actually supposed to already, according to this, it's supposed to already be out, according to Blu-ray.com, but I have not seen it out and about. Well, it's due out this week, it looks like. So go check that out. It's supposed to be, from what I'm reading from, I believe it was Digital Bits, saying that this print, they've had previous Blu-rays before, but no one has been very satisfied with the print and the colorization, clarity, etc. But I believe this one's going to be the definitive one you're going to want. I believe if you go to Digital Bits, they'll even be able to review that for you or give you some information or some more information on it, which is really cool. And let's see, last but not least, figured since it's 50th anniversary, of course, of Star Trek, they're releasing a really interesting set I believe it's December. Again. You know how when you have movies and you shoot tons and tons of footage you don't ever use, it gets usually left on the cutting room floor, and sometimes they save it, sometimes they don't save it. This is going to be called the Roddenberry Vault, and they have handpicked 12 original series episodes that will be in high def Blu-ray, but they will also feature a lot of alternate and cut footage in new features of behind the scenes on those specific episodes on this Blu-ray set. It's going to be roughly, they're saying here it's going to roughly be around $75. The packaging is really cool. It's going to look like a vault on the front, and then when you open the packaging there, you see there it's going to be like, it looks like, you know, film cans on the inside. But that's a very interesting project that they just undertook and finished. And if you go to trekcore.com, you can read the full article about what this is going to entail. It just sounds really, really awesome, especially since I've been a huge fan of the show for as long as I can remember. So check that out. You're going to get 12 original series episodes. Those will include the Corbomite Maneuver, Arena, Space Seed, This Side of Paradise, Metamorphosis, Operation Annihilate, Devil in the Dark, City on the Edge of Forever, Return to Tomorrow, Who Mourns for Adonis, Mirror, Mirror, and of course, The Trouble with Tribbles. These are all been picked because of the relevance to the vault materials that they found that are, of course, related to these particular episodes. So this is the reason why those were handpicked, is because of the material they had discovered. But other than that, that's about it, folks.
Freaking sweet.
Yeah, man.
Well, we don't have a VG Vault tonight, because we are down one Eric. So, what are we looking at meanwhile in Japan?
Oh, that's why I did earlier.
Oh, well, there we go. We're ahead of the game. What? So, we can go ahead and talk about weird movies if you guys are ready.
Cool. All
right. So, this idea actually came about because I was going to be on ESO Network, Earth Station 1 podcast, talking about David Lynch movies, and we just kind of were talking over that and stuff in the chat, and I think Michael was actually the one that came up with the idea, so we decided to roll with it. So, why don't we have Michael start out and give us one of his weird movies?
Alright. So, Land Before Time 8. Why doesn't it exist? It's about the Ice Age. Dinosaurs didn't survive that. Real, that is a real movie. But, no, that's not what I wanted to start with.
I have nothing to say. I haven't seen past, are there really 8 of them fucking movies?
Oh my god, there's 14.
Corey. Of what?
Land Before Time films.
Oh my gosh, there's 14?
Yep.
Man.
I've watched the first 5. So, I always like to make jokes with that, but I have seen way too many of them. And the 8th one really is about the Ice Age, and somehow they survive it. So, what is that about? But, anyways. So I want to start with one. Because I was trying to think of, like, what makes films strange. And even when I was Googling, a lot of them were, like, horror films. But what I really love, and has kind of stuck with me, lately, and this is true in TV too, is the and I don't even remember what the trope is called. It's basically the, I think it's the untrusting narrator. Makes sense. But basically, it's where, yeah, unreliable narrator. So it's where you don't exactly know if what you're being told is the truth. So a good example of that's Fight Club.
So that's good.
You know, by the end of it, you know, you kind of have a lot. And honestly, like, I think that would kind of qualify it strange and somewhat. So what I like though is the film Memento. I don't think really it's a film that would normally stick out to me, but when I watched it, I was just like so blown away by what seemed, at least at the time, you know, like really original. And it does fit, like, even, you know, the Fight Club era with a lot of stuff kind of going on. But I was just like, oh man, so this guy doesn't even know, you know, if he's completely accurate. And he doesn't exactly know when he's wrong, just because of the whole uniqueness of basically suffering intergrade amnesia, which is basically the inability to form new memories.
Yeah.
So he's just always, you know, what is it, tattoos that he does, I think, or notes. But essentially, yeah, trying to...
Oh, it sounds like Blind Spot.
Yeah.
Well, this was way before Blind Spot.
Yeah. Yeah, so he gets tattoos of information that he's trying to use when he's searching for the people who attacked him and killed his wife. And so it's just really, I mean, it was just to me, again, it kind of blew me out of the water. I still think it's not your traditional story, and not told in your traditional fashion. And directed and written by Christopher Nolan,
yeah,
who I feel hasn't quite kept up with that. A lot of people think Inception would be that. I thought it was pretty routine, but, you know, still kind of showed where he was starting from.
Inception was interesting, but you're right. This is something we talked about on ESO the other night, talking about David Lynch, was that, you know, sometimes his shit just comes off as, what's the term, pretentious, I guess?
Yeah.
Like just being fucking strange for the sake of being strange or whatever. But when you limit, you take this person that all in all probably is a genius, right? And if they have no limit, they seem to just kind of go crazy, right? They just go off in crazy directions. And the problem being, like, if you do give them constraints, that's when they really shine, though, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and Memento, for sure. At least, you know, it doesn't seem like it, but they only had a $9 million budget, which I think was part of it, and a lot of it shot in just a few places.
Yeah, it's such a tiny, tiny movie. Yeah, Memento's great. Fight Club's great, too. I thought you didn't like Fight Club, though.
I don't, but I just feel like, again, it's kind of the same ilk. So that's why I didn't expect to necessarily like this, because it was the same people telling me, oh, watch this, and then watch this. And then I just had two very different reactions. Where I love this, and then just didn't like Fight Club.
Man, I love them both, but, you know, I get it. Patrick.
Yo.
Start your list, buddy.
Number three would probably have to, like I said, be the Gorgor Girls.
Okay, cool. Cool. Lewis made your list.
Yeah, Lewis definitely made my list, because I don't know how that came. It was when I heard he had died, I had remembered that movie. Seeing that when I was in high school years ago, and that just made my head turn, like, you know, like I felt like an owl just trying to twist my head around, like, what is going on? You know, it was just the weirdest, weirdest movie, you know, I mean, some woman being, having her butt cheeks beat to death with a meat tenderizing hammer, and that kills her.
Get your ass beat.
It was just so weird. I just thought the whole thing was so weird. You could definitely tell it's very low budget, and they're just making do, and, you know, nothing of course wrong with that per se, but just, you know, just thought it was just really nonsensical. Just couldn't wrap my head around it. I just thought it was incredibly strange, but it definitely just leaves one of those impressions on you, like, you know, oh yeah, I've seen that. Yeah. Really weird.
Yeah, it's pretty nutty, dude. I think that's definitely one of the reasons I like 2000 Maniacs the best, is it's under control.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, is that not, like, his most revered film that he's ever done? Like, the most popular one?
2000 Maniacs?
Yeah.
I'd say Blood Feast probably is.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. It's hard to say. I definitely hear more people talk about Blood or Wizard of Gore, maybe, but I don't know. I don't know, dude. It takes a special person.
Yeah, that'd be fascinating, actually, to know what is, like, if you had to rank them or, you know, critically, what do people think is the best one?
I wonder if Box Office Mojo.
Maybe.
Let me just do a quick search while we're talking about this.
Cool.
Bog things sound too bad. Or I could just not fucking type correctly.
It's been a long day.
Ideas. Oh. I just butchered. Get it? anyway, so actually they may not have it. Nope. Not on there at all. That would take some serious digging, I think.
Okay.
For my number three, I'm actually going to go with a film by a director I really like. I actually like him as a person as much as I like his better films, and that would be John Waters' Pink Flamingo.
Ah.
I don't even, to be honest with you, I think it's on my list because it makes me feel weird, more so than it actually being a weird movie. Have either of you seen it?
No, but I've seen some iconic, like, elements and scenes from it.
So, I guess since we're kind of an adult content show now, we can talk about some of those scenes. I'm sure that, is there any scene you want to bring up in particular, Michael, before I start kind of listing them off?
No, you can go ahead.
So, for people who just have no idea, the film, John Waters frequently used the term is drag queen, right? For Divine. In several of his films, Divine has been described as his muse. very entertaining,
thing.
A very entertaining. But in Pink Flamingos, which, is just kind of way off the deep end, there's a scene of, Divine, walking behind a dog and picking up the dog's excrement and eating it on the sidewalk.
Yep. That's like the most famous part.
There's a scene. Well, this other one's pretty bad too, but they probably don't mention it nearly as much or ever show clips of it. So there's this family that lives in a house or a trailer or something. And, Divine supposedly has a son. And at one point is like giving the son a blowjob, and it's very showy. It shows everything, and it's kind of like and this obviously is not someone related, but it's just kind of uncomfortable. Anyway, Pink Flamingos, very weird. I think it bombed pretty bad when it first came out, and of course gained a lot of hype with the midnight movie scene, much like Night of the Living Dead and Eraserhead. So yeah, check that out if you're not easily offended. it's interesting. It's a good movie. It's rough. Michael, number two.
Yes. So first, real fast, I was just reading a little more about Memento at the end. And so what was interesting to me is there's an interview from a year later where Nolan basically, he's not quite complaining, but essentially there's a character in it, and this is kind of spoilers.
In a safe place.
But there's a character that you kind of are told not to trust, or at least you're told through the main character's perspective, and this is like it's supposed to be a friend. And then at the end, he himself kind of comes out and is like, hey, you know, I've been lying to you. I've just been manipulating you. And no one basically says the audience didn't believe that. And it was just interesting to me because he also did interviews like with the end of Inception where he was basically like, why do people keep focusing on the top and whether it falls or not? That's not the point. The point is that, you know, like Leo's characters reach contentment. It doesn't matter. And it's just interesting to me that he keeps doing these movies where it basically is supposed to mislead you or make you wonder at the end. And then he gets upset about it. So, I don't know. But, okay. So, my number two.
It's a deep movie, man.
Yeah. Well, it's just like, if you're going to use that as a trick, don't get upset when it tricks people.
Yeah, true.
No. But, okay. So, my number two, I kind of wanted to go either way. There's two Jim Carrey films that I feel kind of fit into strange. Well, technically a lot of Jim Carrey films, depending on what you find strange about them.
The Mask.
But, it's one I just happened to rewatch. I was going to even bring it up regardless, but my roommate happened to have it on, so it's even more fresh in my mind, which is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, in some ways, it's funny, because it does tell, I mean, it's basically the unraveling of a love story. And like Memento, it deals a lot with like what you remember. In this case, the wiping of one's memories. But I'd argue that it's the softest sci-fi film ever, in that people may like it who really don't care about sci-fi one way or the other. Because, like, technically that's what it is, because, you know, this is tech that doesn't exist to erase memories like that. But it's so much about, you know, the story of love, you know, like, would you forget somebody, would you rather, you know, forget and deal with a heartbreak, that most people just kind of really move on past that.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That movie is very emotional, like, I don't know. Sometimes I've wished that technology did exist, and that it wouldn't cause some kind of crazy, like, brain tumor or something.
Oh, yeah. Well, and, I mean, I think, you know, sci-fi does a good job of putting things that we want, you know, like, it's like, I wonder if, and then does kind of usually leap to consequences. So even Click, for example, might be a similar element to this, but instead of, you know, trying to forget, it's kind of getting past, you know, the little parts in life that might annoy you. But, yeah, sci-fi, especially if it kind of has a dystopian angle, often really reminds you, like, hey, tech can be great, but it can also have, you know, ramifications.
Yeah. Makes you think, man.
Yeah. It's a good, the good kind makes you think.
That is a good movie, man.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites. Oh, and I realized, I guess I teased this and never mentioned it, but so, like, the other one I was thinking was The Truman Show, which is my all-time favorite show. But I really was trying to remember what would make it strange to me, and again, fit with the whole unreliable narrator, is I don't remember at what point we know it's a TV show. I know it's a big deal when it takes like a halfway through the film before we ever cut to Ed Harris, and then it really becomes obvious, and we start seeing it more from the audience perspective than we do from, like, Truman's.
Mm-hmm.
But I just can't remember, because it's, I mean, it's like Psycho, you know, once you've had, like, a part of it revealed, like, once you've watched it,
yeah,
it's really hard to go back and think of it in that perspective again. So, like, I remember I first watched that at a friend's birthday party ages ago, and, you know, I loved it ever since, but I really can't remember, being that, you know, like, long ago and that young, if I knew what was going on, or if you just, like, something's weird in Truman's world, and then when you're revealed, it's like, oh. So,
I would say the same thing about Fight Club.
Yeah, well, in that one, you definitely don't know until, like, really at the end.
It's pretty trippy. Yeah,
you definitely can't watch it, like, once you know the whole twist. If anything, that's why I don't like it, is because once I knew that, I just didn't believe it.
Just didn't have enough substance for you.
Yeah, I definitely still don't really get the point of the movie, to be honest. But I'm like, I don't think that's even possible.
Well, isn't, I haven't read the book, obviously, but Chuck Palahniuk, isn't that the author?
Yeah.
Like, apparently his books are just kind of nihilistic, and
Yeah, because he did, what did he do?
I can't remember the other thing that someone told me about. Somebody, a friend of mine, read it and told me about it.
Actually, yeah, I'm not
remember.
I'm not. Well, I'm looking at him, and I guess I think I was misattributing a movie to him that wasn't actually by him.
Choke. That was the other one I was told about.
Okay.
He describes his work as transgressional fiction.
Yeah.
Whatever the fuck that means.
That's what you do to put on the book cover. But yeah, so either way, that was mine. My second.
Sweet. Patrick.
Number two. This movie, every time I watch it, because you rewatch movies like these we're talking about, I think they're probably the best thing about them is that you keep finding, I don't want to say like new layers or new aspects, things of the film you didn't really realize before. It's one of Cronenberg's earlier films, and that's Videodrome.
Yeah, that I almost put it on my list.
That is one of the most trippiest films I've ever seen, and I think it's probably Cronenberg's trippiest film he's ever made. And it's pretty, if you haven't seen it, it is, folks, it is pretty weird movie. And it's like, even at the end of the movie, you don't really know if it's real or if it's not. It's really strange. I mean, and it kind of goes through this, wouldn't you say, like, it kind of goes through this series of events where it's like it, you know, when it hits a certain point, you're not even really sure when that point hits, where it's, is it real? Is it on the television? You know, what's going on with that? And this was like in the early 80s. You know, it's really great movie. It's one of Cronenberg's I don't want to call it masterpiece, but it's like one of those that really gets a really good movie to watch with a group of people and then later on talk about what you saw.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those kinds of movies. And I think that's why it's so good. I mean, they've talked about remaking it, and I kind of hope they don't, because I think it would ruin it.
No, they don't need to remake that.
I think it's one of those they don't need to redo. But yeah, it's really trippy film. You've seen it, Corey, so I mean, you can chime in on that one and feel, you know, go for it.
Yeah, I won't speak to anything in particular from the movie aside from Debbie Harry, and it was, I think, one of the best James Woods performances.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to say one of the best, but I think that guy's done just a lot of killer work, but he's really good in it. There's some really weird sex scenes between the two of them. Or like, I don't even know if sex is the word, but sexual scenes. But it's uncomfortable. Like, it's very
awkward.
Exactly like what Patrick said. It's very much like you don't know what's real and what's not.
Yeah, it's so odd.
I guess that's kind of relating back to something we talked about earlier, was like Inception. It kind of has that going on where you're not sure if you're in the dream or in the dream in the dream.
Yeah.
Or in the TV. All hail the new flesh. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's like one of the trippiest things is this is when like Betamax and VHS were competing for dominance. So they're using Betamax tapes in the movie, and like, you know, the technician takes that tape and inserts it into James Wood's stomach. I mean, that was just really weird.
Yeah, it was. What was the thing? Him and Debbie Harry in the movie are like sticking this pin. He's sticking a pin in her or something, like this big ass long needle.
She burns herself with a cigarette, I remember.
There's all kinds of weird shit.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, if we tell you anymore, it gives the movie away, but it's totally worth watching.
Yeah. Yeah. Good movie. If you like uncomfortable, weird semi horrors, sci-fi, I don't even know what the fuck genre it is. My number two is actually going to come from David Lynch, and that's Eraserhead, kind of his breakthrough. The first time I watched it, I was like, there's a 90-minute Nine Inch Nails video going on. What the fuck, you know? Now, after you watch it a couple times and you actually pay attention, there's a cohesive story there, and it actually makes a lot of sense, like, metaphorically. there's an actual, like, good story there. Have you guys seen Eraserhead?
Nope. No, that was one I do plan to actually watch.
I keep meaning to. I think Hulu has it still.
It's one of those movies, I think, that maybe even like the image of the main character is more popular than the movie itself.
That's certainly the movie poster I know very well.
Yeah, just the big hair.
I know they compare Kramer from Seinfeld and compare his hair to Eraserhead.
That could work, yeah. Certainly not his temperament, though. It's a good flick, though, man. I mean, there's some really interesting things there. David Lynch is an artist. I think he's an artist before a filmmaker.
Yes.
But it's one of those things I would recommend to people if they really want something different. And it's well made. It's real well done.
Well, how early was that in his career?
70s? Oh, let me see.
It's 1977.
Oh, wow.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah, it's still on Hulu.
Yeah. And yeah, it's his first feature length.
Okay.
It's,
cool.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's kind of one of those, I don't know. It's kind of one of those that, like, maybe you don't get the first time. I sure as shit didn't. I just thought it was weird for the sake of being weird the first time. And maybe it is, but there is a story there. And that's kind of what I think mostly David Lynch succeeds at, is putting exactly what he wants onto some film.
Cool.
Okay. Michael, what topped your list, dude?
Alright, so, in some ways, this comes from a world where strange is the norm, so it may not actually stick out, but I wanted to choose movies that I did enjoy as well as that were strange.
Sure.
And so this one is Why Don't They Play in Hell, which is a Japanese film, and definitely when I was even looking up lists of, you know, like top 20 strange films, there were so many Japanese films that came up. And, you know, that country, for better or worse, is definitely thought to produce a lot of strange stuff. You know, from celebrity commercials to weird anime movies and so much more. So, Why Don't They Play in Hell is a film that I was introduced to thanks to the film festival in town. So, I was so excited, and thanks to Chris George for that. I was even more excited is they actually rushed the subtitles so that we could be the first worldwide screening of this film, which is just really cool. So it's directed by Sion Sono, who is probably best known for the films Cold Fish, which is one I can never watch for sure, but based on a real-life serial killer in Korea. And Suicide Club is probably even more famous. But he does all kinds of work. And thankfully, I didn't know he did a lot of the other films first, because then I probably really wouldn't have gone. But it's kind of got two adjoining plots. So it follows one group of wannabe filmmakers. I'm going to not say the cuss word, but it's the F-bombers is what they're called. And then 10 years prior... and this is where the movie starts. There's a Yakuza boss that basically kind of attacks another Yakuza boss. And so, you know, that's, you have a Yakuza fight, and 10 years later, like in the present, you have this film club wanting to do like the most real movie ever, epic, you know, just in, of the times, I guess, very, traditional. And so somehow these two very different worlds collide together. And it's not really a spoiler to say, but the eventual ending sequence is this one giant battle between the Yakuza and the film club's just filming it. And so it's bloody, it's over the top. Some of the film club members themselves get killed during the process. And you have, you know, again, very classic, kind of like really out there stuff from a lot of their grindhouse style films. Where, you know, just because somebody gets stabbed doesn't mean they're dead. So, like, one guy walks around with, like, a sword in his head, and he's kind of going after somebody. And it is just, like, so over the top. So if you ever want, especially for you two, like, if you ever want to recommend a horror film to me, it basically has to look like this. Because I've watched a lot of, like, this kind of Japanese film. Like, Robo Geisha is another example. where it's so over the top, it's more silly than anything. So it worked out, but it's awesome. I think it's even on iTunes, so you can rent it. But I highly recommend it.
Cool.
Nice. What was it called one more time?
So it's Why Don't They Play in Hell?
Cool. That sounds like something I'd be into.
Yeah.
Patrick.
Yo.
What's the tippy top?
Pretty much what we've been talking about here the last few weeks. I first saw this movie a long time ago on video, I think. It was, and believe it or not, my dad of all people recommended it. It was the last movie in the world I ever thought he would recommend for me to watch. It was probably back when I was, I guess, getting into horror movies and scary movies and stuff around 11, 12 years old, because he'd seen it on television one night. And once I saw it, I was just like immediately hooked, had to watch it several times over. And I just rewatched it again this weekend with and without commentary on the DVD. And I can't wait for this remastered version to come out in December. And of course, we all know what we're talking about. We're talking about Phantasm.
Oh yeah, Phantasm is strange.
It is the most trippiest movie, or it's one of the trippiest movies I can ever remember. I mean, when Michael came up with this brilliant topic to talk about, that was probably the first movie that just rolled right off my head was Phantasm. And I mean, it is such a classic of, you know, that late 70s style filmmaking and the era that horror movies and scary movies in general were going through, a kind of a golden age at the time. It's just such a great movie. I mean, from beginning to end. And it's not necessarily like it's, you know, not gory per se or anything like that, but it's just, it's a really inventive idea. I don't think I've ever seen anything remotely like it ever. I don't think anyone's even tried to copy it. It is so good. I mean, you've got such a great situation with, you know, young Michael trying to figure out what's going on at the, you know, the mortuary with the tall man who, like Angus Scrimm, God rest his soul. You know, we lost him this year. It's just brilliant as the tall man. And I mean, you just can't, you just cannot walk away from that movie without remembering the tall man. Because Angus Scrimm is so good in that part. And of course, the spheres, which are, I think, called, officially they're called Sentinels. But, you know, you got the silver sphere, you know, landing in your head, drilling out your head, sucking out the blood and whatnot. I mean, it's just a really memorable movie. And it's another one of those movies where you can sit down afterwards and talk about, you know, was that real? Was that not real? Was that a dream? Or, you know, was he really thinking about that? Or did that really even happen? You know, and even the ending, how would you say, Corey, like, would you say the ending is conclusive or not conclusive?
No, I don't think it is. Especially if you watch the next one.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of conclusive if you don't watch anymore, but it's definitely not though when, like you, like Corey said, when you watch the sequels, and the sequels like are, you know, it's once again, it's like every movie just has those things you want to talk about. You know, did it really happen? Was it a dream? You know, what was this? What was that? I mean, you know, it's just a really great series of movies. And then, you know, part five, you know, Ravager is due out this month too. And we're all like determined to go see that because, I mean, it's the last one and we've been waiting how many years for this one to come out?
What's this, four?
I think the last one was 98.
Long ass time, yeah.
Like 18 years for this thing to come out, man. So, I mean, it's supposed to be the last one and, of course, it's the last one for Angus. So, I mean, it's one of the best movies you could watch this season, especially with Halloween and everything coming up. It's one of the best ones. And I mean, just is so cool. I mean, I think even Michael Mike could possibly make it through this one.
I think for the weirdness in particular,
yeah,
he'd be like, I'm a little scared, but fuck it.
might as well stick around. That's you get going. Captivated by weird. So
it's definitely weird, man. I think you could do it because, I mean, it's like I said, it's not a gory movie at all. It's really more about the mystery and trying to figure out what's going on.
There's really just like one scene of kind of excessive gore. And I wouldn't even call it excessive gore. I'd just say a shitload of blood.
Yeah. And a little urine thrown in.
So, yeah. 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 Good pick. My number one. Actually, I'm going to do a Cronenberg movie as well.
Nice.
But I did not think that Videodrome was the strangest Cronenberg movie. I actually went with Naked Lunch.
Hmm. Interesting.
Have you guys seen it?
Sounds familiar.
Been a long, long time. I remember it being pretty weird.
Real, real fucking strange.
No. Okay, yeah, this was one of the ones that kept coming up on the list.
It's like a Neo... I don't know. Actually, the time period, I'm not even sure of. Everybody's kind of dressed like it's a noir
detective. It's apparently based on a novel from 59. It came out in 91, though.
Yeah.
And since it's sci-fi, who knows what time period.
Yeah.
Google image searching it. Looks odd.
Don't want to delve too much into it, but, I mean, there's a scene with... a keyboard turning into a large insect. People are doing some kind of bug spray as a drug. It's insane. It's very crazy. Videodrome is strange too. It really is. But I felt like Videodrome was actually like a damn sight more sensical than Naked Lunch. And I've never read the book. I've just seen the movie a couple times. It's really, really strange. It's not... Michael kind of went with movies that he likes. This one I don't love. It was okay.
Yeah.
Strange name, though. When I was a kid and I'd see that on my parents' VHS shelf, and be like, oh, I should watch this. Got naked people in it. And then I did watch it. And I was like, that's not what I was looking for. But very strange movie. Anything David Cronenberg pretty much is going to be kind of weird. I mean, he took The Fly and made it into, to be honest, he probably made it a superior movie. But he turned it up to 11 in terms of crazy. But yeah, Cronenberg's cool. His kid's making movies now.
Weird. Really?
Movies, yeah.
Cool.
Let me see what his son's name is.
Brandon? Yeah.
Yeah, it's Brandon. I watched some movie he made.
Presumably Antiviral.
Yeah, that was it. That was pretty weird too. Although not as weird as his dad's stuff. So
get there.
The apples.
Give him time.
Time. Just have some good old help from dear old dad. He'll be there.
Anything else we will talk about, gentlemen?
I just want to make an honorable mention, if I may.
Go for it.
I was doing a little research just to make sure I didn't miss anything. I felt like a nice honorable mention would be Society by Brian Usna.
I've never actually seen it.
It's pretty trippy. It's pretty weird. It's been many, many years since I've seen it. I think I saw it on cable years ago. But from what I remember, it's bad movie, but it's pretty ridiculous. I mean, real high rich society has like a really weird secret, and it's like they've got this room where it's really weird and difficult to explain how their flesh just kind of oozes and blends together. And I don't want to say it's like an orgy, but it's kind of like a, how their flesh just gets really weird. I mean, it's just really nasty, weird, kind of using a movie where it's not necessarily horror. I mean, the same guys who did Reanimator, it's horror, but it's not horror. It's like I said, it's truly strange. I mean, once you see it, you will never be able to erase it from your brain, just about.
I've seen just pictures from it, but...
Yeah, it's pretty weird. I mean, like, one guy turns a guy inside out. That's one thing I definitely remember of it, too, at the end of the movie. But, it's a strange one.
It's got a weird orgy scene or something in it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, this dude's face coming out of his butthole.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
So is it a horror movie?
It's a horror movie, but it's like I said, it's really weird. Like I wouldn't even classify it as horror. I would just classify it as downright just strange and weird.
Huh, okay. I'll have to watch this.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, you would probably dig it, but that's what I'm saying. It's like, that's how weird it is. It's like, I don't really feel like it deserves a straight horror classification, but it's just really strange.
They just had a re-release of it too, right? Arrow or somebody?
somebody probably picked it up. I mean, Arrow's been picking up a lot of, like, they've been getting Usenet stuff, and they've been picking up a lot of the really obscure horror titles here lately that I wouldn't think people would really justify a Blu-ray release, but they don't care. They're just picking it up and putting it out, and apparently doing a very, very good job with it. If you go to Digital Bits, they reviewed, I think, just about everything they've done, which they always say is really good.
Okay. Yeah, I'll definitely check that out. I've actually been wanting to watch that and see what the damn fuss was all about.
I want to say it's back from the late 80s.
Yeah, it looks like it. Well, hell, man. Just real quick, I've been buying a lot of shit lately. Like, not expensive shit, but just going to run through a couple things I picked up. Got a few movies.
Cool.
I ended up buying all of the... that's for you, Patrick.
Yeah.
I ended up buying... did you guys see where Walmart had some re-releases of all the original Universal monster movies? They put them in like slip covers that were glow in the dark.
Oh, they're at Walmart?
Yeah.
I saw those over the weekend.
Well, the thing is that the movies are identical to the re-releases from last year.
Oh, okay.
But they put them in these glow in the dark slip covers. That's really the only difference.
Yeah. I did hear that they did put out like, and curse Best Buy, they put out a Blu-ray collection of, I think it's like all the Frankenstein related movies from that era.
There's the Legacy collections.
Yeah, they took those and like they're like fully remastered Blu-rays, and they put them out in a collection sets of that and the Wolfman. And they're like $30 a piece, but nobody locally has been carrying them.
I've seen the DVDs at Walmart. I haven't seen the Blu-rays.
They say the Blu-rays are immaculate.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they look good, but I mean, how much better can these older films get? I mean, I guess they can get pretty good if they went back and got the original.
I guess. I mean, if you get it, like I said, if you get, I know I keep bringing it up. I'm not getting paid for this. If you go to Digital Bits, they do a full review on it, and they say it looks like the best it will ever look. Like if you've, you know, you had like the Universal DVDs for a long, long time that came out in the late 90s. Mm-hmm. Early 2000s, they port all those extras over from those editions to this new Blu-ray set. That's $30, and you get like, I think it's, I want to say it's like 8 movies in that Frankenstein set. And they say it's like the best it'll ever look. Probably, I think they said it was like all the features from all those different ones are ported over. They ranked it very high for Frankenstein.
Yeah, I've got the Legacy collections on DVD from the older release they did.
Yeah,
so I haven't really pulled the trigger on it, but I did get all the standalone movies in the glow in the dark slip covers. I couldn't resist.
Cool,
because I just wanted them on Blu-ray. But
yeah, I'd want Invisible Man on Blu-ray for sure.
Yeah. I get that one. There was 8 of them.
Awesome.
Frankenstein, Bride, Dracula, Wolfman, Creature, Mummy, Invisible Man, Phantom.
Cool.
We were at this little store down here in Ringgold the other day called Fred's, and I had never been in there. I always like to look at the movies, you know, wherever I go. And mm-hmm. I don't always buy something, but I ended up finding the 2 sequels to The Lost Boys on Blu-ray for $3.99 a piece.
There were sequels?
Yeah, there's one called The Tribe and one called
Lost and Found. Not really, but that'd be great.
What?
I said Lost and Found.
Oh, yeah. No, that's pretty good. They were $3.99 a piece, so I was like, eh, these can't be that bad, right? So I just wanted to try it.
Neat.
So I haven't watched them yet, obviously. But yeah, that's just my movies I've bought lately.
Cool.
All right. Anything else you guys want to discuss before we put a pin in this one?
No.
Sweet. All right. Well, guys, we'll be back next week. I think Eric and I kind of figured out a topic for next week.
Nice.
What was it? I think it was we're going to talk about masks. So we're going to get our October stuff started up.
Nice.
Let's see. I don't know. Anyway, we're either talking about masks or horror makeup. So, guys, come back and visit with us next week, and we'll discuss that. And I'll try to get us a guest on here. I'll reach out to one of my mask maker buddies and see if they'd join in, because that'd be really cool.
Cool.
But yeah, we'll be back next week, guys. More Vitamin Geek fun. And it'll be October, so we'll be talking about spooky things all month long. I want to thank my co-host here, Michael Miller.
Oh, take care, everyone.
And Patrick Sykes.
Later, guys.
That came through in the clutch. All right, guys, we'll see you next week. I've been your host, Corey Keelan. Peace.
You got to ask yourself one question, punk.
What the hell is a cigar nerd?
Welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast.
It's the only show where two guys smoke cigars and talk about nerd culture.
Do you like movies, games, comics, sci-fi, pop culture, and beer?
Do you like science, nerd news, explosions for no apparent reason?
Then this is the show for you.
It's like being in a nerdy cigar shop, but for your ears.
Check us out at CigarNerdPodcast.com.
Take two of these and call me in the morning.
Broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.